Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sober Shaman podcast. It is a beautiful Sunday morning here in Chiang Mai, Thailand. And I have the neighbors playing, I guess, what sounds like the equivalent of 70s pop rock in Thai. Right next door to me today. I don't think it should come through the microphone, but this is what's going through my ears right now. It's kind of like a syrupy Thai version of Air Supply or something like that. So it might affect my mood in ways that may be apparent or not. Welcome to the Sober Shaman. We're going to talk about today the last post. This will be a companion piece with the last written post on Substack, Dear the Spirits of This Place. So we're going to talk about the spirits of place. And it's a big subject. And it can go into a lot of different directions, and there's a lot of different kinds of spirits and spirituality that it is often culture-based. The spirits of place are so intertwined with the culture, and the thing about Thailand that is so beautiful is that the beliefs for something like the spirits of place, the lineages are unbroken to this day in many areas, especially here in Chiang Mai. And the ways in which the average person connects to and reveres and honors the spirits of their place, of this place, it's wonderful to see it in action on a daily basis. So that is a beautiful thing. And as one of the people I just met, I bought Peter Jenks's books about the spirituality of Thailand. And one of the things he was saying is that there's so much that is not only culture specific to Thailand, but regionally specific from one, and as the word is called, an Ajahn, someone who is a lay practitioner of the spirituality here, as opposed to being a monk. And many of the Ajahns, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that exactly correctly, were monks, and so they have this wonderful background of Buddhism, Buddhist monks, of Buddhism and the kind of animistic beliefs that are inherent to this place. So all that to say, I am in a place, this place is alive for me. As I record this podcast, as I do this exercise from the last Substack written, Dear the Spirits of This Place. And it's a beautiful thing to be a part of this kind of culture right here, right now. A blessing. And one of the things that I hear talked about is how wonderful it would be if we can rediscover this kind of practice wherever you are, wherever maybe you're visiting, maybe wherever you're from. And that's another topic I'd like to go into today. We'll shift here into, well, when I say the spirits of this place, it does imply wherever you are right now, where you're doing the writing, the shamanic rites to this place and the spirits of where you are right now. But there are other ways of doing this. And a couple of them would be writing to the spirits of maybe the place you were born. I feel that that is, let's take these one by one. Let's go by the spirits of the place you were born and maybe the spirits of the place where you feel home or where you were at home. And then maybe where the spirits of this place of where your family came from. Let's take those three. So the spirits of where you were born. For me, that's the island of Manhattan. And while growing up in my late adolescence and early adulthood, I spent a lot of time walking around Manhattan. And I was not, I did not have the vocabulary and really the insight or the direction of any particular system or structure or teachers that were able to explain to me what it was I was feeling and or what I was searching for. And a lot of that walking I was doing was just to feel what it was like to walk along the place where I was born. And obviously Manhattan is a very complicated little island. And despite that, and despite the vast changes and the vast amounts of cultures there, it does have a kind of spirit. And for me, that's what I was unknowingly, but knowingly from within, just walking around. I did go to the Institute of Audio Research there, where I was learning recording music, you know, as a backup, just in case I didn't make it in the playing of the music. And so in between, I'd have like a morning class and then an evening class. So I would have like 8 hours during the course of the day, often to just fill in and walk around. And I found many wonderful little power spots, many little sanctuaries of peace. And I wish I could remember one particular spot in Greenwich Village there where it was I forgot what kind of church, but it was this beautiful little grounds. And when you walked in, it was like the city was on the outside and you were in this sanctuary. And it had a wonderful garden in which I don't think they were priests, I think they were monks, would allow me to stay outside there and do any work I needed to do and or just read and or just hang out. And there were many spots like that. But this search for connection to the spirits of the place you are born, this might be one of the places for you that you're curious about. And so in doing that shamanic rites exercise of dear to the spirits of this place, I offer to you that may be one of the ones you write to. Maybe that's the one that calls strongest to you at this time, maybe more so than the place where you are right now. Or maybe it's just another place that you would like to explore. Maybe you haven't thought of the spirits of the place where you were born. For many cultures, where you were born is as important as the astrological timing and positioning of the planets. It's often part of that. The location and how that aligns with the rest of the stars and the time is of significance. Maybe that works for you, maybe it doesn't, but that's another idea, that this the place where you were born is often incorporated into the creation of your natal chart, whatever culture that may be from. Some of that might be something for you to look into there. Dear the spirits of this place. And that's the place where you were born. And of course, I would suggest, if you can, to do the exercise while visiting that place. The next one I would suggest would be, dear the spirits of this place, for the place you felt at home. And you may have to go back far. For me, I have to go back to my childhood, ages from about 7 to just before my 16th birthday. I was blessed enough to live in a place that was close enough to the wild, where I was still very lucky to be able to walk, ride my bike to places that felt wild, that had animals, life that still was wild. And for me, this was upstate New York. You know, I'll read part of the last post, because for me, I didn't even realize it until after I had written it, that this was part of the soul courting that I call, that I like to do, where we are, well, we have identified a soul part of ourselves that needs to be retrieved, that needs to be welcomed back, that where we have had soul loss, is the shamanic terminology, where a part of our soul has split off and it needs a retrieval. And the difference between soul retrieval and soul courting is my experience, that so that we need to do for ourselves, versus the soul retrieval in which the person in the role of shaman would do for the client. So very simply, in traditional societies, the role of the shaman would be to go into non-ordinary reality, find this fragmented piece of soul for the client, and bring it back and return it back to the client. In my experience, in today's society, I feel that it needs to be shifted a bit, and that the client must be a participant in the process. And more so than in the past. Well, maybe not more so in just weighing out the amount of responsibility, but more so in understanding that they are going to have to do this retrieval. And to where in the past, because it was part of the culture, because it was part of the society, because it was part of the everyday natural part of life, everyone in that society, or at least close to them in that society, knew that the client received part of their soul back, so they would be able to watch, hold, and participate and facilitate that client's ongoing participation in making sure that soul part stays. Because we don't have that in today's society, it unfortunately, in my opinion, falls upon the client to have to then participate in the courting back of this soul and to be aware of what is coming back, why it wants to come back, why it left in the first place, what responsibility is the client for doing that. Again, it's because of trauma, abuse, heartbreak, and loss, as I say, the TAHL, T-A-H-L, trauma, abuse, heartbreak, and loss, when this soul part splits off, which is a natural part of survival when these things happen, and at the same time, now that we are here all these years later, we are responsible for understanding, digesting this trauma so that it is not part of, I'll turn it into me statements now, it's not part of my ongoing story of this happened to me and I'm a victim. It is part of my ongoing story of now this happened to me and I take responsibility, and now I take responsibility for welcoming this soul part home and making it safe for him, my soul part, my child part, to want to stay. And I take responsibility for doing the things that not only make him feel safe, I'll say my 9-year-old part, making him feel safe, but making him feel alive, making him feel like he wants to stay, making him feel like I, in my present state, am trustworthy for keeping him safe, for keeping him happy. And in so doing, I will receive his gifts. What does a 9-year-old soul part have to give me as far as gifts? Treasure, heaven, passion, joy. I'll tell you what a 9-year-old has to give me. And this is, as I was saying, the part I just wrote down in the last post that I didn't even realize was part of a soul courting. But this is what it has to give me back. And I'll read to you now. I felt my first home and deepest sense of belonging growing up in upstate New York, about 70 miles straight up the Hudson River. We were on 3 acres of land with a garden of corn, lettuce, zucchini, pumpkins, squash, carrots, apples, cherries, pears, more apples and more apples, pickling the cucumbers, cantaloupe, potatoes, peas, broccoli, cauliflower, and the best beefsteak tomatoes in the world, hands down. With too many deer mowing down the finally fruiting asparagus that took so long to grow, frozen toes and frozen fingers playing hockey all day on frozen ponds, watched by hawks, owls, and buzzards, with a head full of angry hornets after I wrist-rocketed their magnificent gray papered home. Honeybees, lots of wasps in the barn that were much easier to outrun than the hornets. Nightcrawlers, feral dog packs, lousy loud hunters who were as subtle as a belly flop from the rope that swings out over the reservoir to drop you a good 40 feet into the never warm enough water, where if dived correctly, the temperature drops drastically in a second as you zip down into the creepy, tangled muck. And to prove how bad those hunters actually were, I'd stalk close enough to touch those same deer more than once. Because I was taught by Taffy, my still wild cat, who brought home her catch daily and once climbed a bare winter tree to successfully eradicate a perched humongous snowy owl from her territory with a surprise smack in the tail feather. Fish, bats, skunks, fat groundhogs standing up from the back of the garden mockingly masticating what I thought were my root vegetables in a side-to-side chew that looked awfully a lot like a smirk. Dairy farms and meat farms, fresh eggs from super chickens, long bike rides between friends' houses, speeding down hills faster than cars, fast enough to make your eyes fill with water, fast enough to feel the edge. Deer paths that have too many sharp turns to navigate safely while riding a runner sled through the fresh snow at top speed. Cardinals, jays, red-winged blackbirds, the migration of crows moving in and taking over empty fall branches and leaving just as suddenly a few days later, the late spring wail of the mother cows when the calves had been taken away, exploring fields, creeks, hills with my black lab, Pepper, who was hit by Mr. K's Jeep, and I held up his broken neck and bleeding skull in the back seat of Mom's Oldsmobile on the way to the vet. And then, not understanding why he couldn't help, and how I still carry that dog's tag in my medicine bag today. And that written part, that part of the written post, I realized afterwards that this is a kind of soul courting. It is a kind of reconnecting to that 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14-year-old boy. That soul part that had been split off because of the trauma, abuse, heartbreak, and loss, the toll that I had experienced in my life. We all have this toll in one form or another. No one makes it through to adulthood without having some kind of heartbreak, some kind of deep loss. The kind that we are one way before and that we are another way after. That's it. There's no bargaining. One way before, another way after. And these affect our beliefs, our identity, and our stories. And that goes into a lot of directions. But for now, for the writing of Dear the Spirits of This Place, this would be that second example. The first one was the place where you were born. This second one is the place where you felt at home. Home with a capital H, as we talk about in the recovery program. Home. Safe. Alive. Passionate, where there still was that connection to magic and everything that comes with it, possibility, imagination, unlimited possibilities. And then the third part, the third example of what you could write to, what you could use this prompt, dear the spirits of this place, would be where you are right now. And that kind of brings me full circle to the opening of this particular episode when I was talking about Chiang Mai. It's where I am now. It's not where I was born. It's not where I have childhood. It's not where I have family. It is a different culture that looks at things differently. And as I've written about in that last post, in order for me to be a good tourist, to be a good guest, like, this isn't rocket science. Spirituality, if you want to call it shamanism, it's not beyond the realms of your capacity to imagine. It's common sense. Be a good guest. How do we be a good guest to the spirits of this place? Well, let's start by being a good guest to the people who live here. And one of the things that I wrote about was how far learning how to say a greeting and a goodbye goes in a foreign land. Learning how to say a greeting and a goodbye in their language and their colloquial, you get the point. How to say it in a way so that they feel respected. They feel like, I'm trying my best. I'll probably butcher as far as the phonetics and the emphasis of where to put it on the right syllable, but I'm trying. And if you've done any traveling, you can see, you'll know what I'm talking about. When you see that first smile after your first attempt on saying hello. Sawastikap in Thai for men. And kapun kap to say thank you for men in Thai. And the rest of it, as I like to say, I do my best to get by with my New York Italian animation and using my hands and explaining through motion. I can do pretty good. Much to the embarrassment sometimes of my loving wife, Dana, who is learning the language. Once again, it's Sober Soulful. Check out Dana Lee Lyons's posts about Thailand, about sober, soulful living, by all means. The spirits of this place, dear the spirits of this place. So, being a good guest is a wonderful place to start. And bringing in that humility of, I don't know. In other words, I'm not trying to force myself into getting what I want the way that I'm used to getting what I want, into a place that may be completely foreign. It knocks over things. It knocks over people. It, la bruta figura. It's brutish. It's not elegant in any way. And it could come across as downright rude. Some people just don't care. I do. And I propose that if you want to write and gain the help and at least the acceptance of this, the most superficial layer of the spirits of this place where you are now, where you are a guest, that you bring this kind of humility, that you bring this kind of release, surrender of expectation, surrender of the expectation of accommodation, that you will be accommodated in your expectations for fill in the blank. I am a guest here. That is a good place to start. Now, in the spirits of this place, when visiting a new place, besides those thoughts, intentions of humility and respect, there are also the cultures and customs of the place you are in. And when dealing with the spirits of this place, they go all over the place. In other words, there can be prominent spirits of nature, of the elements, of trees, of mountains, of bodies of water. There are guardians. There are thresholds. Of course, there are ancestors, familial, maybe tribal, maybe national. There are ghosts, there are deities, there are holy teachers, and there's taboos. And of course, there are gateways to the lower world and the upper world. So when dealing with, when writing to the spirits of this place, I don't know what your intentions are, but this is one of the reasons why in spirituality and in shamanism we emphasize intention. And again, I'm going to emphasize the intention of humility and respect and honor when in a place that is not of your culture, or even if it is of your culture and your birth and or your childhood and soul cording and just connecting with that love of the land of home for you. Regardless, we should bring humility and respect no matter what, but especially if it is a place where we are a new guest and the bones of our ancestors are not buried there, right? One way of saying it. So what is the intention of who you are writing to? Who do you feel connection to right off the bat? And this is why, again, I will use Chiang Mai, Thailand. All of the beautiful temples that are here and all of the monks and the monk talks and the people you can speak with from this place about these things that maybe you feel affinity towards: nature, the elements, trees, mountains, bodies of water, specific guardians, specific deities. Also here in Thailand, there is not only there is this outward, obvious buildings, and the Buddhism is the main thing. And I don't even begin to call myself a Buddhist in any way, shape, or form. And at the same time, I sure do love these people, and I sure do love this land of smiles, and I do not believe that it would be called the land of smiles if it was not a Buddhist country. There is something about this deep respect for this kind of, and I know it's a spirituality, and I know that some people call it a science of the mind, but this intention and attitude and wonderful spirit of Buddhism that is here and so prevalent in everyday life. I am so thankful for that. And at the same time, the Buddhism was built in many cases on top of and suppressed the animistic societies. And what makes this place, I think, special is that those animistic societies, again, were still able to retain much of its animism to influence the Buddhism in this place so that they are intertwined together. And then now the third thing is that I was confused when I would go to some of these Buddhist temples and I'm like, look, I don't know much about Buddhism and I don't know much about Hinduism, but that sure looks like Ganesh. And that sure looks like, you know, dancing on some skulls kind of Kali. And, you know, these look kind of Hindu. And there is a strong mixture of Hinduism in the Buddhism, into the temples, into the beliefs. So there is this wonderfully complicated stew of Hinduism, animism, and Buddhism. So depending upon who you talk to and who is the lineage holder of a particular line, they may be a specialist in one or two or maybe just even one of these things, wearing a different robe or wearing a different outward appearance. And that is another, I find, beautiful reason to be in the spirit of this place and to explore the spirit of this place and to be humble and ask to be included in the spirits of this place. So for you, you know, while it may be unique in its presentation of such a wonderful intertwining stew, there's other places that are like this. When I speak to the practitioners of the United Kingdom's shamanism, spirituality, specifically maybe the rural parts of any of those beautifully complicated, story-driven Ireland, Scotland, the rural parts of England and Wales, and plenty of exactly these things, exactly the where Christianity, whether it's Protestants or Catholics, have been built on top of and suppressed the animistic previous owners, residents. That animism just grew right up and through and with the Christianity and is still alive today in many places. There, along with the spirits of this place, of trees and mountains and bodies of water and guardians and thresholds and ancestors and ghosts and deities and teachers and taboos and gateways to the lower world and upper world. So, there are the three examples that I can think of for right now to write to the spirits of this place. And what you may want to consider writing to for you, and what you're drawn to, the first one being the spirits of the place where you were born. There's a very specific kind of connection, I feel, for me, to where I was born. And maybe because it's Manhattan, it feels to me very complicated still. And when I've gone back there and visited the mausoleum with my son, I brought my son. All right, here's a wonderfully quick story. A story that I'll make quick. Probably 10 years ago, I wanted to take my son, who I guess would be at that time, let me do the math, I don't know, what, 12, 13? So maybe it was longer than, longer than 10 years ago, maybe 12 years ago, 13, 14 years ago. So because he was young, 10, maybe 10, 11, I wanted to take him to the mausoleum of where part of the matriarchal side of my family was housed. I wouldn't say buried because they were all cremated. And they had a little space where all the urns were held. And so it was just across the river in Hoboken. And it was a gray, one of those northeast gray cold days, about 38 degrees, rainy, cloudy, dark, not much light during the day kind of days. And we visited this mausoleum, which was old and kind of felt equivalent to the gray day. And so down these corridors, which were not well lit, and we found the very dusty compartment where all of the Garbaccios, that's my family name going back to Italy, all of the Garbaccios on this side of the Atlantic were buried. And I will just say that we learned a few things, discovered a few secrets opening that up. But the funny thing was, it's like, who's this guy? We've never heard of him. And when we took out his particular urn, his particular old-fashioned can, it popped open, like literally popped open by us just picking it up. And there was this magical moment of me looking at my son and my son looking at me and just, what the? And in between our eyes was all of the ashes of this particular ancestor just kind of snowing down like a snow globe and cover. I guess he wanted to come with us. He wanted out. And so we got to carry little pieces of him on our clothing. So, yes, ancestors of the spirits of place. The place where we were born. The next one would be the place where you feel home, where you felt home. And I read to you that part for me that was straight up the Hudson River and the Mid-Hudson River Valley, growing up on that wonderful rolling patch of land, rolling hills, where it was still long stretches of wild, even if the wild were corridored off between apple orchards and corn farms and dairy farms and stretches of civilization. Lucky enough to have that. And then the last one would be the place where you are now. If you are a guest. If you're a guest, bring the respect and the humility of being a guest. And I know I've talked about that. And at the same time, don't forget, we are carrying all of the first two with us. We're carrying the spirits of the place where we were born. We are carrying the spirits of the place that we call home with us. And we are bringing that to this place of the spirits where I am now. And for me, when I do this exercise, when I did this exercise, part of me is envisioning a feast of half the table serving Italian food. Half the table serving Thai food. And from my father's side of the family, half the table serving Polish food. Don't forget the gołąbki, the kiszka, the kielbasa, and the blessed pierogis. Sitting down at the same table, arguing about whose food is best and why. Maybe making concessions that, think about a pierogi, right? Think about a dumpling. The Italians call it a ravioli. The Thais are going to call it I have gyoza, so that is a Japanese term, but I sure do love the way the Thais make some gyoza around here. Who makes the best dumpling? Why have a war? Just decide who makes the best dumpling and make the concessions where it is obvious who does. And how delicious it would be to try a little bit of everybody's. Dear the spirits of this place, I hope that if you do this particular shamanic rites exercise, and here's three different ways of doing it, you garner the gifts of the place where you are now, the place where you felt at home, and the place where you were born. And may you carry those gifts and express those gifts and share those gifts as you move forward. If you do this exercise and you feel like sharing it, by all means, put it in the comments below, wherever you're listening to, watching this, or on the Substack, or if you want to see read the written aspects of some of the things I missed about this one in the talking podcast episode, go back and check out some of the written things. Send me any questions, comments, concerns you have to spirit@randalllyons.com. I'd love to hear from you. Hit a little like button, little subscribe button. I appreciate it. And until next time, blessings.